This is Dr. Ronald Hoffman. Maintaining bone strength is complex with no single solution. My patients who want to optimize their bone health have seen remarkable results with LiveMD as part of a comprehensive bone program. LiveMD is a Class 1 medical device cleared by the FDA. It creates a gentle, low-intensity vibration to benefit your musculoskeletal system. It's a safe, scientifically proven, and simple approach to maintaining musculoskeletal health and wellness. It really works, just 10 minutes per day. Go to livemd.us, that's livemd.us, to learn more about how LiveMD may improve your health. That's livemd.us.
Welcome to the Intelligent Medicine Podcast. This is Layla Mutin. I'm the nutritionist at the Hoffman Center. And hey, I've got my very own podcast that is up every Friday. So I hope you get a lot out of it. I thank you for listening. And guess what? I've got a question. I've got a question from Gary. Would you please clarify what constitutes a meal? I ask, is there are products that are sold as protein powders and drinks and others as meal replacements? The protein powders make a point of warning that they're not meal replacements. And the second part of his question is also, is whey protein the best for muscle building? And is it really a precursor for glutathione? Gary, thank you very much for your question. So the first part of it, what really constitutes a meal? It kind of depends, and the reason that some of these protein drinks or powders that you're seeing, the warning where as they're not meal replacements generally means that A, they either don't contain enough macronutrients to comprise a meal. You want proteins, fats, and carbs, but secondly, they probably don't contain enough calories, which is very important. For example, if you were to take some type of a protein drink or shake or something like that, and it's only got about 125 calories, that's really not a meal. That's more like a snack. I mean, imagine if you will, if you were to use a 125 calorie or even a 200 calorie drink to replace all three meals of your day, you're only talking about 600 calories. That would never be advised for anyone. And I think that's why you see these warnings. Now, what constitutes a meal? Your breakfast, lunch, dinner? It also depends on possibly the amount of calories. You want enough macronutrients, again, enough proteins, fats. Certainly, you can have a meal that consists of just nuts. You could, because if you eat enough of them, you'll get a good 400 to 500 calories, which should probably be the caloric load for most people of a meal. 400 calories, 5 to 600 calories. Again, I don't advise too much, placing too much importance on the calories. If you're going to have a 400 calorie meal and your other meals are also going to be 400 calories each, it's only 1,200 calories. That's not great. And remember what I said a while ago, or I'm sure I've written about it, we have to keep fooling Mother Nature and not eat the same amount of calories every day. This is actually very, very important. So, now getting to your question about whey protein. Whey protein is wonderful for muscle building. It's probably the protein of choice for many of you gym enthusiasts or exercisers and athletes because after your exercise or a really particularly grueling workout, you want to repair those micro tears in your muscles. And one of the best ways to do that, first of all, you want to eat within a 45 to 60 minute window after your exercise. If you're exercising in the morning, I would say to you, go eat breakfast, go have an omelet. You're getting plenty of protein there. But if you're exercising in the middle of the day or even later in the day, maybe you're going to have a whey protein shake instead. And that could be a good idea. Now, for those of you who are allergic to dairy, you should probably avoid whey. I do see people who have a whey sensitivity or an allergy. So be careful of that. I don't recommend that for everybody. The advantage of whey protein over plant proteins is that they contain the branched chain amino acids, which are leucine, isoleucine, and valine. These branched chain amino acids help in the retention of lean body mass, like your muscle, your skeleton, and they also help in repairing those micro tears after your workout, after your weight training workout, your cardio workout, all of that. Now, these branched chain amino acids are not only found in whey protein. Please be advised. These branched chain amino acids, which are essential amino acids, there are at least 18 or 20 of them, amino acids in general, I mean. But the branched chain amino acids comprise some of the essential amino acids, of which there are 9 or 10. These are also contained in all animal protein, your chicken, your fish, your red meat, all of that, your wild and game meats. So keep that in mind. It isn't necessary that you take whey protein to get your branched chain amino acids, although it's pretty convenient. Now, I don't recommend whey protein for everybody. I do have some clients who they want something when they're on the go. I think probably it's a good idea, provided there are enough calories in there, or if they're using it as a meal replacement or something like that. But generally, I do recommend it for my athletic clients, but especially, and you may be surprised here, I recommend it for my elderly clients who are losing weight, who are becoming sarcopenic. Sarcopenia sounds like osteopenia. You know that osteopenia is the diminishing of bone mass. Sarcopenia is the diminishment of muscle mass. And this is something that happens as we get older. So I have some elderly patients and clients who aren't eating enough or are just relying, you know, maybe on some fruit and a piece of toast and a cup of tea, and obviously, in that meal, there's no major protein going on. And this is a reason for sarcopenia amongst the elderly. When we don't take sufficient protein, it will lead to loss of muscle mass, reduced strength, decreased bone mass, even low immunity. And did you know when we don't get enough protein, our cognition can be impaired? We can have trouble with memory. When we don't get enough protein, our wound healing is delayed. You know, one of the first things we learn in dietetics as undergrads and even during our internships is the people who have the highest protein needs are those who have experienced trauma or a surgery or something like that. So getting sufficient protein is absolutely essential. And if we don't, it can lead to a functional decline, which we call frailty. And this is what happens in our elderly population, all right? So whey protein is also the precursor to glutathione. It could really help to boost glutathione. So will N-acetylcysteine. That's a supplement, otherwise known as NAC. NAC is N-acetylcysteine, and this is a known precursor of glutathione. What is glutathione? Glutathione is the master antioxidant in your body that is used for detoxification. You want to make sure that your body has the ability to make enough glutathione, and the way we do that is to make sure we're getting enough good quality protein, specifically high biological value protein like animal protein and or whey protein, as well as N-acetylcysteine. This can take care of it for you. All right, Gary, thank you very much for your question. And now, speaking of meal replacements and protein drinks, let's talk smoothies. How many of you are having a green smoothie? A lot of people. I can even visualize all the hands that are going up. You're probably having a green smoothie, A, if you're on a detox regimen, B, if you've recently changed your diet due to illness, maybe even due to cancer or something like that, and you are now committed to a much healthier lifestyle. And three, other people are doing a green smoothie a day as a meal replacement or as a cleanse or to possibly spur some weight loss. Well, There are some rules I have about the green smoothie that you're having. First of all, you never want to make a smoothie out of more than you would actually eat. For example, if you're having a kale or a spinach smoothie every morning, you don't want to use more kale and spinach than you would normally ingest, say, out of a bowl of salad. I hear too often of people taking a whole bag of kale, putting it in the blender or the Vitamix or the Nutribullet, and making a smoothie out of it. Well, guess what? There is a lot of oxalate or oxalic acid in many of our greens. The most common components of a green smoothie are greens like spinach, kale, arugula, chard, and a lot of these have oxalate in it. Well, you know, when we're on a low oxalate diet, we're not just avoiding things like spinach and chocolate and black tea. Well, let me back up a little bit. What's the problem with oxalates? Oxalates can be very problematic in those who are prone to kidney stones. Oxalates are actually chemical compounds that are found in our bodies, but they're also found in the plant kingdom, especially seeds, nuts, fruits, okay? And the key to being able to eliminate oxalate from the body effectively is to make sure that you have a very well-working gut. Now, before I get into what does that mean, a good, well-working gut, a very clean and healthy gut, what else can oxalate do in the body for those where it may be a problem? Oxalate overload, if we're not able to excrete it properly, besides causing kidney stones, can cause other problems, such as can exacerbate fibromyalgia, joint pain, muscle ache, has been implicated in autism, which is very interesting. Women who suffer from vulvodynia, discomfort in the genital area, vulvodynia, many benefit from a low oxalate diet. As a matter of fact, all the symptoms can pretty much go away, the symptoms of vulvodynia on a low oxalate diet. And of course, the main people, those who are prone to kidney stones or have had kidney stones in the past, or, you know, it's best for them to be on a low oxalate diet. So you're probably wondering, which foods are the highest in oxalate? Guess what? Are you ready? Are you sitting? Blueberries, figs, blackberries, raspberries, kiwi, oranges, the vegetables that are highest in oxalate besides arugula, spinach, kale, they're also Brussels sprouts, carrots, celery, broccoli, olives, parsley, nuts and seeds, definitely, in almonds, cashews, and peanuts, and most of our legumes, such as soybeans, black beans, navy beans. Now, what's the best way to reduce oxalate in the diet? You could, first of all, try a calcium supplement, and I mean specifically calcium citrate. Calcium citrate will bind to oxalate, or oxalate will have a tendency to bind to calcium citrate and then can be eliminated from the body. So that could be helpful. You want to make sure that you have excellent gut health, first and foremost, because when the digestive tract is not working well, then we have trouble with elimination. We also want to make sure that we have enough beneficial microflora. Taking something like antibiotics, if you've taken a recent round of antibiotics, that can increase your body's risk of oxalate overload. And the reason for that is antibiotics, you know, do a very good job of wiping out bad bacteria in the gut, but they also wipe out the good beneficial bacteria, which we need for our microbiome. This beneficial bacteria is also needed to break down oxalate. So it's imperative that if you're taking antibiotics or you've recently taken antibiotics, you need to re-inoculate your gut with probiotics. Speaking of probiotics, I'm going to venture for a minute. What is the best time to take probiotics? On an empty stomach or a full stomach? Well, there are two schools of thoughts. all by very reputable scientists, and I want to tell you what that is. Some scientists will tell you it's best to take your probiotic on an empty stomach because that's when you have the least amount of stomach acid, right? Stomach acid occurs when we're eating food in order to help break down dietary proteins, carbohydrates, fats, all of that. However, there's another school of thought. Other reputable scientists say that you should only take your probiotic with food on a full stomach. The reason being, the food in your stomach is soaking up all that stomach acid, so it won't be available to break down that probiotic. You know what? I think possibly they're both right. So oftentimes I will tell people who are taking, you know, 2 doses of their probiotics a day, what's the best way to take it? I'll say, take one of those doses on an empty stomach and take the second dose with food. That way your bases are covered. Not a bad idea, right? Coming back to oxalate, besides improving your gut health, very, very important, right? Make sure you've got good quality probiotics, that you're eating a very clean diet. You also want to address any candida overgrowth. When we have candida, it can cause a leaky gut. That makes it very tough when you've got dysbiosis in your gut, meaning bad bacteria growing in the gut. That can get in the way. That can inhibit the breakdown of oxalate in the gut. So if you've got a well-functioning gut, you're going to have a well-functioning immune system, and you're also going to break down oxalate well. And oxalate should not be a problem for you. But remember what I said about the green smoothie. You want to make sure that you're not throwing more food or more greens into that blender than you would normally eat. And your green smoothie should not be 12 ounces, 16 ounces. This is probably too much, too many greens and things. What you want to do is literally fill a bowl of salad that you would eat and finish and put that in your Vitamix Nutribullet blender. You may only get 6 ounces of juice, maybe 4, maybe you might get as much as 8. But guess what? That's really all you're supposed to have. Keep that in mind. And by the way, those of you with hypothyroidism, low thyroid, you don't want to have things like kale, broccoli, Brussels sprouts, things of that nature, chard, in your green smoothie every day, because these vegetables, known as the brassica family of vegetables, can be goitrogenic. Goitrogenic, what that means is those particular vegetables, when you eat them or drink them in abundance, can actually inhibit the uptake of iodine by your thyroid. Your thyroid needs iodine to make thyroid hormones, T4 and T3, and to convert T4 to T3 so that you have a well-functioning metabolism. So, and you know what? The green smoothie is just fine. But did you know you're also pre-digesting it in your blender? I prefer you digest it yourself with chewing, with the churning that your stomach is going to do to digest it. This will slow down the absorption and will have the least impact on your blood sugar. Very, very important, right? Important stuff. So, now, one of the last things I'd like to talk about today, and I'm very, very dismayed that this is still going on. This question is still being asked. Butter versus margarine, which is better for you? And unfortunately, there are many mainstream nutritionists out there that are still in the dark. They are quoting butter as containing a lot of artery-clogging saturated fat. Now, we know that saturated fat is not the promoter of clogging your arteries. This has already been debunked. And in addition, to add insult to injury, many mainstream nutritionists are still touting the benefits of vegetable oils such as canola and safflower. But you know what? I talked about this in a recent podcast. It's not the way to go. You want to stay away from all of these vegetable oils because of the high amount of omega-6. So butter is good, and I am a believer that everything is better with butter, but you want to make sure that your butter is pasture butter, it's grass-fed butter, it's organic butter. You don't want any unhealthy hormone or antibiotic residues. Okay? So, this is unfortunately still going on. Mainstream nutritionists are saying, you know, the cons of butter is the cream content, also known as milk fat, contains both saturated fat and cholesterol. Yes, it does. But they say that these are the two dietary ingredients that will raise your cholesterol and increase the risk of heart and vascular diseases. No, it does not. In the presence of a high carbohydrate diet, yes, that can happen. But the saturated fat is not to blame. It's the high carbohydrate diet in and of itself. So I hope that more will pay attention to the science and not give out this bad advice. So I had to put in my two cents about that. I thank you for tuning in and listening to Layla Weighs In on this Intelligent Medicine podcast. This is Layla Mutin, RD. I see patients every day here at the Hoffman Center. If you require a nutrition consult with me but live out of town, there's no need to travel to New York City. I have telephone consultations with clients from all over the country. Please visit drhoffman.com for more information. And to set up an appointment, call 212-779-1744. That's 212-779-1744. I look forward to being a collaborator in your healthcare.